I want to welcome Stephanie Philp to the studio. Morning, Steph.
Morning, Aaron. Morning, listeners.
So it's Monday morning. Time to chat to you. And we're Steph is a life coach. Do you say life coach?
No.
You don't say a coach?
Yeah.
Okay. She'll help you with your mind.
Yeah.
And
I'm the head consultant at Inside Your Mind.
There we go. That's the one. And today, we should say that your training is in neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah. So I'm a trainer, I'm a master trainer actually of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. And maybe I'll give a plug for my course coming up on the 16th of September. So if anybody wants to become an NLP practitioner and is willing to put in 18 days worth of training over 3 months.
Okay. So you do it in three one-week blocks.
3 6-day blocks, yeah.
6-day blocks, yeah.
Yeah, Monday to Saturday. And the first one's 16th of September. And it finishes in November.
Okay.
So it's about a month between each block.
Well, people will get an idea of part of what you talk about by what we talk about today, which is beliefs. That's what you want to talk about. Beliefs. Why do you want to talk about beliefs?
Well, I think
you're not talking like religious beliefs or something like that, which sometimes people.
Any kind of belief, really. A belief is a belief, but they can all be different. But it's so you know that saying of I'll believe it when I see it.
Yes.
Well, it should be the opposite, that you see it when you believe it. So once you believe something, you tend to start seeing it. And I've just put an article up on the website called Belief in the Placebo Effect, Is Your Mind Leading You Astray? And there's a story there about the University of Cincinnati where they conducted an experiment with some student volunteers. And the students were told that the experiment was going to be to test the effects of stimulants and sedatives. So, of course, the students were blissfully unaware and thought they were in for some kind of experiment on pill popping. But they were randomly given either a blue pill or a red or a pink pill.
Yeah.
A capsule. And then shortly afterwards, half the students reported feeling drowsy and over one-third of them were unexpectedly stimulated.
And so so the pill was?
So they were either going to be, you know, more relaxed or more
normal,
stimulated, energized.
Right, one or the other.
Yeah. The stimulated students' pulse rates averaged 61% increase and there was a 71% increase in systolic blood pressure. Pulse and blood pressure dropped in the sedated students, though to a lesser extent. So, you know, to all intents and purposes, the capsules seemed to have worked. But the capsules were actually placebos. They contained nothing at all, like little sugar pills, that would impact mood or physiology in any way. So it was the belief about what they were taking that made the difference.
And there are scores of studies like that.
There's
lots of studies like
and
that.
And even hypnosis, you know, I mean, you can, you know, people at the stage hypnosis, they can hypnotize people to believe that they're chickens walking around eating rice and stuff. You know, there's all sorts of studies that prove this is the case. So that being the case, then, you know, our belief comes before what we actually see. And this is because at the back of the brain stem, there's a group of neurons that's called the RAS, which is for short for the reticular activating system. And that's responsible for us seeing things that we want to see, basically.
So yeah, so we've talked about this before. Like I call it a filter. Well, more expert people than me call it a filter.
Cause yeah, you could call it a filter. Yeah, but it's based on the things that you already believe. So a typical example is buying a new car and then seeing, you know, loads and loads of other people driving the same car, which you hadn't noticed before. Or if, like, even on Saturday, I was at a course and there was a woman sitting next to me who had a blouse on, which is exactly the same as the one as one I'd got. I hadn't got, wasn't wearing it, otherwise we would have been very bright. But and I knew where she bought it from and everything, so I wouldn't have noticed that if I hadn't had a belief about the blouse, you know. So our beliefs come before what we see.
So the
The RAS.
Its job is, like the way you've described it to me in the past, is that we absorb too much data, too much information for our brains to actually cope with it at any one moment. Like we'd be overwhelmed if we became aware of everything.
Yeah, that's right.
So this part of the brain is designed to show us what it believes we want to see.
That's right. It's showing
us. Sounds a little bit autonomous, like this little person in there that's going, oh, you want to see this? Like a Facebook algorithm in our brain.
Yeah. There was a movie where they had a little person or something in there that was organising stuff like that. I can't think what the movie was now, though. But, yeah, the filters, the way we filter information, like beliefs is one of the filters of our external experience. And others are things like memories, language, time and space. So all of those are filters, and we're deleting, distorting and generalising information as it's coming in. What the RAS does is going, oh, this person really likes, you know, whatever it is, like really likes dogs,
yeah.
You know, really likes, I don't know, bearded collies. Like this woman I was sitting next to, she's got a bearded collie. I used to have two. Well, yeah. What are the chances? They're not like a really common breed, right?
Well, this person really thinks the world's a horrible, bad place.
That's right. And
you meet people like that, like they're just constantly talking about all the stuff that's wrong in the world, and they can't see the good stuff.
No, because they've... their beliefs now. And so, you know, like people say, well, how do beliefs start? Well, they just start as a thought and then they start looping and then they become an opinion and then they keep going, you know, and then the more you have an opinion about something and you're looking for something to, not necessarily consciously, you're looking for things to support that thought or that opinion, and then it becomes a belief. And so then you're looking for things to support that belief.
So the thing I'm a little bit unsure of, though, is how that works with the placebo effect. I get that the test subjects, in the example you were talking about before, they all believed they had a stimulant or a
sedative.
Sedative. I nearly said depressant, but that wasn't the word I was looking for. Yeah, so they genuinely believed that, and their brain genuinely believed that. But how does that then go to actually physiological changes?
Well, that just shows you how powerful your mind is.
That's what we're going to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if, you know, if you...
don't doubt it did happen, even if we don't quite... we probably don't really know how that happens, do we? Like,
well, it's the belief. So you're...
it doesn't feel enough just to in my head, it doesn't feel enough to say, oh, well, we just believed it, so it happened. Like, but that is kind of happening.
I think, you know, there's a lot of research as well with doctors where they've given, you know, maybe they've had a patient and they thought this person's just a hypochondriac, you know, there's nothing wrong with them. I'll give them some placebos.
Yeah.
And then Aaron and I were arguing over the pronunciation of placebo, but it was placebo or placebo, and I said it was placebo, and he said it was placebo, and we agreed that it was placebo on the air, but I forgot just.
Yeah.
So where doctors have just given, you know, placebos, and the patient people have got well because they believe they're going to get well.
And are these people they suspected believed also were just believing that they weren't well?
Believing that they weren't well, yeah. And
that's
also
the definition.
A belief in the doctor, presumably, as well, you know, that the person is qualified to give them what they need to get well. So there might be more than one belief. It might be, well, the doctor knows what they're doing and they've given me something that so I'm going to get well. And so they get well.
And a funny comparison is we talk about, in the Western world, we talk about things like witch doctors and voodoo and things like that and other parts of the world, and say there's all that they have all these paraphernalia and these rituals and all this stuff that makes people believe. But if you think about going to a doctor, like we go to see a person who has a special qualification that they spent years getting, you can only meet them in one place and you have to go and you wait till they're ready and there's a person with a desk and they've always dressed, even though the way they dress is normal, if they dressed and outside of what you'd expect, you wouldn't, like if your doctor was in shorts and a t-shirt and jandals, you would not really think that they were that good. And so there's all these things that we always do, and if we stepped outside of that pattern, we wouldn't. I think the placebo effect that the doctor could give is would be so less. We would distrust them. And
well, it's the same, like if you went to get your tie fitted and the guy was dressed in a suit, you probably think, well, you know, how good is he going to be? And then again, if you went to see your lawyer and he was dressed like a tie fitter, you probably wouldn't have much credibility there as well.
Although with tie fitting, placebo effect isn't so important.
No, exactly. It's not going to affect your health.
No, but for that's just what I was just reflecting on, that there's a whole lot of paraphernalia that comes with being a doctor that we expect.
That's right.
And I'm sure affects the placebo
effect. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, if it was just random people off the street went in and said, we're going to give you these pills and, you know, these are the effects, then he probably wouldn't have done because these were
just a word there, folks. If someone, a random person on the street, gives you a pill and says you should take it, don't do that. Yeah. That's not what we're advising.
No, exactly. I forgot what I was going to say now. The thing is then is to think about what you believe. You know, so I've talked about this before. If you believe you can't trust people, then you'll look for things and listen for things to indicate that you can't trust somebody.
Mm.
And then because you're thinking that way, the person is probably going to get a bit uneasy because, you know, we can sense when somebody's looking for things or it's not quite right, you know.
Yeah, you're not connecting properly.
You're not connecting properly, not in rapport, you know. And so then
definitely no rapport when someone's coming at you suspiciously, with suspicion.
With suspicion, that's right. And then the other person starts behaving like, oh, you know, like a bit nervous. And then the other person goes, oh, yeah, look, he's nervous now. That proves that he's untrustworthy, you know.
You've basically induced it.
You've induced it, yeah, that's right. And so the thing is as well is that when you believe something, you know, so we're talking about negative beliefs here, but it could be really great beliefs. Like I have a belief that everything happens for the best. So that helps me. It's just one I invented years and years and years ago that, you know, so if everything turns to custard and goes, it's okay, Steph, you know, everything happens for the best. And I can see, you know, sometimes it's months later, sometimes it's just a few hours later that if that thing hadn't have happened, then this other thing, which is much better and put me in a different and more better place, wouldn't have occurred either. I can trace back, I can follow the dots, you know.
Does that also mean that you see the opportunities when they come as well because you're expecting something good to be around the corner as opposed to thinking the next thing's going to be even worse?
Well, I always say, you know, that I'm open to new opportunities. And so that means, for me, it means, a simple analogy is some people go for a walk and all they do is they look at the cracks in the pavement and they never look up and see anybody, right? Whereas when I go for a walk, I'm looking in peripheral vision, I've got my eyes open and I can see everything. I can see the ocean, I can see the bush, I can see the beach, and I can see people coming towards me. And when I do that it's kind of like I'm open to new opportunities. Another example would be driving behind somebody and all you're focusing on is their bumper. And then you nearly run into the back of them when they make a sudden turn or stop. But if you're in open vision, peripheral vision it's called, then you can see that there's a traffic jam and there's some roadworks, which there always is lately, you know, 2 kilometres down the road, and you're aware of everything that's going on. So, you know, you're not going to run into somebody's bumper. So having that more expansive, open vision is one thing. But before that, you still have to have a belief that, you know, maybe the belief is the world's a good place and people are generally good. Rather than, you know, the world's out to get you and everybody's evil, you know. One extreme to the other, but you know what I mean. But there are people that have those kind of beliefs, you know.
Yeah.
That's how they experience life. And then, of course, the thing is that the more reference experience you have, add to the belief and make it more and more solid.
I had the experience of changing that when I was younger. Something about being younger and the experiences you have as a young person and as a teenager and a child, I was more suspicious of people I was meeting, and I would be inclined to interpret things they'd done or said as a negative in some way.
Right.
And then I got sick of being wrong, discovering later on that I was wrong and that I'd upset someone or I'd been upset or something like that.
And I saw one day
I was just like, oh, I'm just going to assume everyone's nice.
Yeah.
And go from there, because it's not the point was not whether I was right or not. The point was how it was affecting everything else that was happening.
That's right.
And it was like overnight. I've said this before on the air. It was like I stopped meeting crazy, difficult people.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still around, and I still do kind of meet them sometimes. But
They're not drawn into your circle of friends.
Yeah, they don't come near you, or you don't even notice. There might be someone, they might be dropping hints that they think you're an idiot, and you might just be like, oh, you don't even notice. And like, yeah. And so does it matter?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good example.
Does it really matter that they were doing that? And, you know.
They're not your, they're not your tribe.
Yeah, or what people think about you is none of your business.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Hey, there's a belief thing I do want to talk about, though, is about in parenting. Or in fact, not just parenting, but anything to do with kids and young people, our beliefs about them are usually proven right, whatever the beliefs are. Because I know, like, you know, there's people who believe that kids are always going to be naughty, especially teenagers are going to be really troublesome, and that you have to, like, be really firm and control them, and so they don't make mistakes.
Go off the rails,
you don't go off the rails. And those are the kids that go off the rails. And quite often, there's also kids who are completely uncared for and they go off the rails too. But I'm just talking about the beliefs that, you know, and if you, I don't know, I think as a parent, as a grandparent, as just an adult in our kids' lives, we should always be their biggest champion. You know, just really believe that they're going to be fantastic and amazing.
Yeah.
And I seem to, even though I can be quite negative about a lot of stuff, but I'm not about our kids.
Right.
In the community, like I know heaps of them, although we're young adults now.
Yeah.
But, I think most of them are pretty fantastic. Like, I genuinely do.
Yeah.
And, my experience of them are like that.
Right.
I mean, I could, like, pick apart every little thing they do. I mean, they're not perfect, well-rounded human beings yet, you know, but, like, you'd be realistic about that. But I just see so much potential in them. I'm quite confident about, I think they'll do a better job at running the world than the last two generations have.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so, see, the thing is, you've already got a positive belief about, youth, young people, children.
I know, I'm kind of rare. I know I'm fairly rare in that regard, and some people think I'm crazy, but I've watched people who are really tough on their kids because they misbehaved.
Right.
And so, and it's a kind of repeating pattern.
Right.
And, yeah, and the kids still go out.
And sometimes those beliefs have come from the parents' parents.
Yes,
you know,
yeah.
They've been brought up with.
And there's things like terrible twos and teenagers are trouble and, you know. And
So that it's not just our personal beliefs, but they could be community beliefs or, you know, generalizations of beliefs about children, you know. And so we can pick those up and then behave accordingly. So the person...
And they'll get the message. If you think they're trouble,
of course they will.
They'll get the message. They're reading it. Like kids are very good at reading adults.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to be.
So those are things in NLP we call them meta messages. So those are the messages that you send when you think you're not sending a message.
Yeah,
so
right.
Through your body language or your behaviour or other things other than what you say.
Yeah.
So we can say one thing but do something completely different, you know.
Yeah.
Say, oh, yeah, I trust you, and then you're micromanaging. Well, you know, the micromanagement speaks a lot louder than what you actually say.
Yeah, yeah.
So people will pick that up. So the beliefs that we have then are constantly, you know, we're constantly interpreting our life through those beliefs. So if you're, you know, suspicious of somebody, then it's time to look at the beliefs. And, you know, in the article, I've got a way of people being able to do that. And I can sort of go over that roughly now, is that because beliefs have sort of come around over time, we talk about them as if they're physical. Like, we're talking about them as like it's a physical thing that you can hold in your hand, but you can't, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
They're just thoughts that are on a loop, on a repeat. And the more that you think it, the stronger it becomes, you know. So one of the ways to do it is to look at, you know, what the belief is and then examine it in a present time by turning it back into a process, i.e., let's say your belief is things never go well for me, right? Okay. So if you believe that, you'll have lots of reference experience that prove that. And each time you see something like that, see or hear something that lets you know that things never go well for you, it reinforces the belief. So instead of stating it like a fixed, unchangeable truth that things never go well for me, you can flip it into the present tense and go, I'm believing things never go well for me now.
Right? Okay, yeah.
So when it's in the now, then it's under your control. So you can examine it, right?
And this is all in the context of the RCA? Is that what? No.
Yeah, the RAC.
RAC.
RAS, sorry.
RAS, I'm screwing up.
The reticular activating system.
The RAS, which is filtering out information. So if we have a strong belief that things are never going well for me, then that'll say, okay, here's more evidence. Here's another thing that went wrong and you don't even see the thing that went well.
No, and all the things that went well, you don't see. So by putting it back into the present tense, you can kind of challenge it. So you could question it like, how am I believing things never go well for me? And so this nudges you to think about the belief a bit more. So you could say, well, I'm believing it because other people seem to have more luck than me. Okay. I had a puncture on the way to work this morning. Some things haven't gone well for me in the past. I never win anything. I've told myself things never go my way. I've believed people who've said things never go my way, right?
Yeah.
And then you can challenge those answers. So you need a pen and paper for this. And again, this is on the website, so people can go and have a look and go through the exercise. So challenging the answers like, does other people's luck really mean things never go well for you? Do things ever go right for you? Can you list a few ways things have actually gone well for you in the past? Can you think of at least one thing that's gone well for you this week or even today, you know? Do you really believe everything people tell you? So it helps you to start spotting like negative thoughts, and then if you have a belief that you think that's holding you back, then you can start changing it. You might write an affirmation or keep telling yourself every time a negative thought around something comes up, you could go, okay, I'm cancelling that thought or stop that thought and change it in the present moment, because that's all we have is the present moment, to something that's more positive. Because, you know, these thoughts have an impact on our health as well. If we think in negative thoughts, then, you know, those thoughts have an impact. Because our mind and body are connected, those thoughts have an impact on our body as well.
I read this great line the other day, someone saying that we should think about the thoughts that we're putting into our head the same way as we think about the food we put into our body.
Yeah.
So we don't put toxic, well, we know we shouldn't put toxic, non-nutritious stuff into our body.
Yeah.
And we got and this person was saying, think of negative thoughts as the same thing.
Exactly. And I mean, we only eat, well, I mean, maybe we eat twice or three times or four times a day or whatever it is. But our thoughts, we're having 50, 60,000 of them a day. So which do you think is going to have more impact on us, the food that we eat or our thoughts?
And I know we're not, like, I'm not talking about achieving perfection with this, but I just thought it was a nice angle to think about it.
Well, I've got Steph's rule.
What's that?
That you're only allowed to talk to yourself the way you talk to somebody you really cared about.
That's actually a really good one, because we do say things to ourselves like, oh, I'm such an idiot.
Yeah, right, you wouldn't. So if you keep saying that over and over again, it'll become a belief. You could change it and say that was a stupid thing to do.
Mm.
So then you're not attacking your own identity as I am stupid. It's like that was a stupid thing to do. That's your behaviour, which you can change. I mean, everybody does stupid things. You know, and this is, you know, going back to, you know, kids and teenagers. Of course they do stupid things because they haven't got the experience of the mother or the father.
Yeah, they're learning how to be in the world.
And, of course, if we remember as kids, we did stupid things too. And so the parents want to prevent the children having negative experiences like that, whatever that is. But that's how they learn. You know, it's difficult to learn from, unless you're an adult, from somebody else. You know, you have to make your own mistakes and learn from them.
And if you want them to not have so many negative experiences, but you spend so much time trying to stop them having negative experiences, then what you're saying before the meta message is actually that they're idiots.
Yeah, yeah.
You think, as a parent, you think exactly. They're an idiot. You're given the impression that they're always making mistakes and need to be rescued all the time. Yeah.
Or the other thing is if the parents are doing everything for them, the message is you're incapable of doing it for yourself.
Yeah.
I have to do it for you.
Yeah.
So then you create mummy's boys and mummy's girls and daddy's girls and that you know, incapable of looking after themselves.
Yeah.
So this is why I'm saying the beliefs are so powerful in terms of what we get to experience in our life. So the idea that I'll believe it when I see it, it's the other way. You'll see it when you believe it.
Yeah.
So looking at and changing your beliefs is really, really important if you want to live a better life.
You might not even be aware of the beliefs. Like you're talking about that parenting one, like people might not be aware that...
No, that's it. That's why there's an option
to
think differently.
Yeah, to not come in with that under that idea that the kids are always going to make mistakes and you've got to save them from it.
Yeah.
You might not be aware that that's how you're operating, I think, like this.
That's true. So yeah. This comes back to self-awareness and, you know, so because we exist in systems with other people, like you and I are in a system now with people that are listening as well, a family is a system. And so a parent and a child are in a system as well. So when you change a belief about the child, then you're going to behave differently, then the child will respond differently.
That's why when parents take the kids to counsellors, the counsellors want to talk to the parents as well.
Well, I mean, I used to run a course. It was called Parent Effectiveness Training, and the guy that developed it, he died about 10 years ago, I think, Thomas Gordon in America. After the war, he wanted to train leaders, but, you know, the corporate America weren't really interested, so he thought, okay, well, what's the next generation? So he decided to teach parents, and because he was a psychologist and parents would always bring the kids, and always he found the problem was the parents, not the child. So he developed this course. And then he developed other courses as teacher effectiveness training and leadership effectiveness training. And they're all the same, but they're just set in different contexts, you know. And so he quickly identified that it was the way the parents were behaving and their beliefs about the children that was causing the problems.
Right.
And so he developed a course called Parent Effectiveness Training to raise better children so that they, you know, didn't grow up helpless and didn't grow up with wherever possible negative beliefs, you know.
Yeah, because it's like we've established that the negative belief that you hold will forever be tripping you up in life.
Mm.
You won't see good opportunities.
You could go through your whole life. I mean, probably we all know people that have these kind of beliefs, and they keep attracting the same kind of negative experiences to themselves, and then that reinforces it for them. They go, well, there I go again. You know, I mean, that's my life, and they believe that, and so they attract more negative experiences like that.
Must be challenging.
This is part of the law of attraction as well, you know, just getting off track a little bit.
If you're halfway through your life and you want to change that belief, that actually could be quite challenging.
Well, you've still got the other half.
True. But it's also like really quite hardwired in by that point. You might not do it overnight.
Well, that's why I put that exercise on that's on the website in there, so people can start to challenge them. And sometimes the beliefs have come from a time where, you know, it might have been something traumatic that happened, and somebody made this is less usual, made a decision and adopted a belief at that particular time, and that's where NLP coaching can help to identify where the belief came from and what the experience was and what the belief was that you adopted or the decision that you adopted at the time. Because what happens is you keep experiencing the same kind of thing on a regular basis throughout your life. With that belief, you know.
That's quite a powerful thing to be able to say, I keep having these negative thoughts, these inaccurate negative thoughts,
mm-hmm.
because of that thing that happened when I was a kid, that traumatic moment.
Well, people don't know.
No, but if you can, then say pin it to it. Like that's,
yeah, that's right.
That's why I expect things to go wrong, is because that big thing happened then. Right. But that was just then, and that left a belief, and I don't have to believe that. Like, if you can pin it to that moment.
Well, I think the problem is that when usually it's before the age of seven, and people can't remember it consciously, the mind's blocked it out, and so you know before the age of seven, we're basically just an unconscious mind.
We're taking anything.
And so with NLP, there's some processes where we can find what that original event was, have the person explore it from a dissociated perspective so they're not having to go and relive it again.
Yeah.
And then re-examine what it actually was, because it's nearly always before the age of seven. So as an adult, they can look at it objectively and go, oh, okay, well, I can understand that now. And this is what I adopted the belief about. And you know, I can let that go now. And then there's some healing work goes on. And then they stop creating the same experiences in the future.
Mm. Mm.
And it's amazing, you know?
Yeah. All right. So. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. So you just want to mention, we're talking to Stephanie Philp from Inside Your Mind.
Yeah.
And as we said at the start, you're a neurolinguistic practitioner trainer, yeah. master trainer.
Yeah.
And you're doing a course soon. If people want to sign yeah. up, how do they do that? It's a big course.
So it leads people to an internationally recognised certification as an NLP practitioner. Starts on the 16th of September. There's a couple of places left if people are interested. Can go to the website insideyourmind.com and then just click on training. You'll see NLP practitioner training there. And it'd be great to get some people from Raglan on it. I think I've got one.
You've got people coming from out of town.
They're coming from all over. Somebody coming from Canterbury, I think, and all over.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well. You're doing your bit for the tourist trade as well,
winter. That's the idea of doing it in winter, is that it helps the local community out when things are a bit tough in the winter.
And it's easier for your people to actually find somewhere to stay as well.
That's within reach of their budget as well. Yeah.
All right, Steph, thanks for coming in.